Sinners, choosers, lovers, dreamers, hypocrites, cynical bastards, and earnest beams of light, welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Thank you for tuning in. If you've never heard the show before, this is the show where me and a guest, usually from the comedy community, not always from the comedy community, talk about whatever religion we grew up with. We talk about if we have a religion now. If we don't have a religion, we make one up. This week, we didn't have to make one up, because this week I had my first ever Hindu guest on the podcast, Sujata Day, who was such a delightful person. We took a UCB class years ago together, and it was awesome to reconnect with her and see where she's at now. She's going to be on a new HBO show coming out in a couple months called Insecure. That debuts on October 9th. I'll definitely push that out back when it comes back again. She's an actress out here in Los Angeles. Such a wonderful, fun, very just positive person, and so fun to be around. And I think you'll really like this episode. Some episodes are more theory based on like getting into like theological stuff, and some episodes are more just talking about our backgrounds, and I like both equally. And this is so great to hear more of Sujata's life story, and I really think you guys are gonna like it. So that's it for any kind of intro this week. If you like this show, chooseyourownreligion.com for old episodes. I'm gonna be adding more stuff to the website soon. Hold me accountable to that, please. You can also like the Facebook page. You can subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher, Google Play. And guys, if you are really feeling the love emanating out of you and you feel just drenched in so much love that you don't have anywhere to put it, you could put that extra love into a rating or a review for this podcast if you like it, or if you really strongly feel like you don't like it. Either way, the truth must come out. But if you don't want to leave a review, that's cool. As I've said all the time, and I really mean it, I love that you guys listen, and that's enough for me. So thank you for making this thing possible and interesting and relevant. So love you guys. Please welcome Sujata.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
Because I remember like 3 years ago, I remember my perspective taking that UCB class, our 101 class,
right,
with Mel Cowan. I remember going in, I was totally only, I was like all only into stand-up. That was the only thing I ever dreamed, like only ever wanted to do. And so I went in kind of like, yeah, let's see what this little improv shit is all about. But these people haven't been on stage for real, for real. And then, like,
oh,
there's a little
wow.
bit. There's a little bit of that.
Okay.
Just a little bit of that.
So you thought you were better than all of us.
Not yes and no. I mean, but not really, just like in the sense that I think a lot of stand-ups, we have to have a chip on our shoulder as like sort of a maybe a defense mechanism, mm-hmm. like for why we're not successful otherwise. It's like, well, they don't know how hard it is, they've never bombed in front of an audience. That's only a small part. I'm making it sound like a bigger thing than it actually was,
right.
But I just remember how fun seeing that class was, and how everybody really surprised me, how like talented you people were, and you especially. Like, I really felt you were really natural in that class.
Oh, thanks!
Like,
oh,
a natural like funniness about you. And
cool.
I was like, oh, that's
nice to know.
That girl, she's fucking got it.
She's got it.
Yeah.
I came into the class. I had taken two IO classes, and I was like, I looked around, and I didn't like really connect with the community there.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to connect more. I want to be in classes that have actually more girls.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
wait, is IO a sausage fest? I didn't even know.
It was at the time. So that this was what, like 3 years ago.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
At the time, it felt like sort of like a white sausage fest.
Uh-huh.
So I was, and I, a lot of my favorite, like, I don't know, black girl comedians were kind of at UCB. Mm. And I was like, oh, I just kind of want to try it and see
yeah.
what that community is like.
Uh-huh.
And I did like it a little bit better.
Did you keep going? Because I didn't keep going.
Yeah, I went
originally.
All the way up through advanced. And,
oh, wow.
And
nice.
Then, yeah. It was fun.
And then
Did you, but you never did like Herald teams or anything like that?
I did not do Herald teams. I did a couple like indie teams and did a couple shows. Like I put together a couple female teams.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Like all female teams. But then for me, I started getting really busy in other parts of my life. And I was like, oh, I can't like lead this anymore. And, you know, sending out the emails, sending out the practice space, getting the coach. And so basically for me, I was like, oh, if somebody else wants to kind of lead this.
Yeah.
I'm so cool with like just showing up, but then nobody ever took the reins from me.
Logistics have killed so many great improv groups and relationships too, probably.
Oh my gosh. There's so many like hookups from my rule was never to hook up with anyone at UCB.
Oh, that's a good rule.
And I followed that rule.
Nice. I almost followed that rule. Okay. Almost did. I've always tried to view, especially like stand-ups, that's the most I feel this way, that like, as like coworkers, like it's like they're like sisters or something, like people I'm even attracted to. I don't know. I like having that a little bit of a, I don't know. It just muddies shit.
Potentially. Super. I mean, I've seen a lot of improv relationships just crash and burn. Yeah. So.
Wait, I want to go back real quick to a completely irrelevant thing.
Okay.
You had a couple female teams, right?
Yeah.
Can I ask you what your team names were? Do you remember?
Oh my gosh.
Am I putting you on the hot spot right now?
I think there was one team where we just had one white girl.
Uh-huh.
So we called it like, oh my God, it was really funny. And now I can't think of it. It was something like just one white girl or something.
Because I secretly love like, when all female teams have like a fun like kind of gendered like name on it, and I remember my favorite was Aretha Franklin, which my friend Nina Concepcion on it. But then Nina told me that like a couple months afterwards, they're like, wait, guys have urethras too. Like,
I thought of it. It's token white girl.
There you go.
That was it. Yeah. Boom.
Got
TWG.
It. TWG for life.
For life.
Until the group emails die out.
Until I relinquished my post.
I mean, but I used to, you know, I've been organizing. I've organized those group emails before and on groups that have come and gone. And like, I got to tell you, like, I used to get more mad about it. But now I've been in the like the person in the group text that just like, just please let this group text die.
Oh my gosh. I'm not into group texts at all. And now they can tell if you leave.
Oh yeah.
So it says like, Sujata Day has left the group text. And now you're just like, rude.
Right. Yeah. Do you ghost? Do you do an Irish goodbye on your group text? Or do you say like, hey, sorry guys, I got things going on.
No. I ghost. I'm just like completely silent. And I like to ghost in real life at parties too.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. I hate like going around and hugging and goodbye to everybody. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, especially I don't know if it's especially out here or not, but I don't know. I feel like I'm putting on a production if I do that or something, or I'm like it's gonna take a lot of time, or maybe I'm just afraid that people will be like, okay, cool, nice to see you, or something like that.
I think people appreciate it more if you just like leave.
Yeah. Or nobody, at worst, I don't think anybody cares.
Nobody cares.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, fuck, why didn't Joe say bye?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've never ghosted, like, in, like, dating or anything.
Never?
I don't think so.
Not even, like, first date? He texts you, you're like, this is not going to work out.
I think I've always been, like, being like, oh, like, we're better friends or something. Like, I will always just, like... You know,
yeah,
because to be perfectly honest, you run into everyone
again
in LA, and you're probably gonna work together, and you're probably, you know, so I think that's just like the nice thing to do.
You'd probably be on a team called Token White Boy,
Token White Boy, and then he's the white boy,
and you're like, well, shit.
Yeah.
And then he ghosts on your group text, and you're like, well, I guess I deserved that one.
Yeah, I deserved it.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I used to hate. I pretty much never ghost. I probably have at some point. Now I'm like just like racking my brain. I'm like, I can't say never because there's probably sometime.
I'm thinking of something maybe like 5 years ago, but I can't think of anything.
Right.
So.
And it used to bother me way more when people did on me. But now I kind of get it, because like I've seen enough of my woman friends who have like who like the horror stories they'll tell of like clingy dudes or dudes who just don't get it and things like that. So I'm like, on that level, I'm like, okay, I get why maybe you just want to detach as like quickly and silently as possible.
Yeah.
But then the other part is like, okay, this is actually a thing that happened to me a couple weeks ago. So I went on a first date. I would say the date was like, it was like a 7 out of 10, right? In terms of like how it went.
That's good.
At least that's how I felt. Like I felt, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, I'm in love right now. But it was like, yeah, we had a good conversation. We were making each other laugh. It was fun,
that's
whatever.
Great.
Got a little peck at the end. I was like, okay, cool. That's all you're trying to do on a first date. You don't need to go crazy. So a couple days pass. I text her and I asked her, I'm like, do you like dancing? And she goes, are you asking me out to dancing? And I said, I only am asking you if you like dancing. She goes, well, actually, I think we're better as friends. I think we're just, I think it's like, it's best if we like move on. I'm like, well, then why did you even ask if I'm asking you? Just ghost on me. Please ghost on me in that scenario.
That is so crazy.
I know. But it was like, I mean, I just have to laugh at it now. But
yeah.
I'm like, but see, that's how I'm saying. Like, I get it. Just please. If in that scenario, I would rather have just ghosted and been like, cool, she doesn't like dancing.
So I think what I want to know is, do you like dancing?
I love dancing.
Ooh, okay.
But caveat, these are the two main times I dance. At a Phish concert,
right,
which I just went to 2 days ago.
Okay.
That's the when I dance with the least... self-awareness, self-consciousness, like it's the best. Like I just let go.
Do you take drugs?
I have historically.
I just feel like Phish concert to me just is synonymous with some kind of, you know.
Nothing. I've never honestly taken anything hard at a Phish concert.
Oh, okay.
Never. I mean, weed. I've done weed
right.
More than once at a Phish concert.
Yeah.
But no, also I was a sober Phish fan for like the first 5 years of being into Phish.
Oh,
like
there you
I
go.
Genuinely love the music. And I've defended Phish ad nauseum on this podcast before. But so that's one place I love dancing. I also love contra dancing, which is like hippie folk lion dancing that I learned in the mountains. But apparently a lot of people do it out here too. But it's like old hippies do it and like some young college students
do it. And you said it's called contra dancing?
Yeah. It sounds like Latin or something, but it's totally, it's the least Latin, like it's one of the wider things.
And it's got steps. Like choreography.
Yeah, yeah. It's got like steps. They teach it beforehand. Like, so there's a general swing to it that's like the move. It's like the chorus of every dance, like where it's like you and a partner, you spin them around and like, and that's like a prominent theme in every version of the dance. But then they teach each dance before that has like certain, it's like there's like little patterns of four of like you and a partner and another set of a partner. You complete like maybe a 16 beat pattern of some kind of weird dance. And then you move on and do it with another couple.
Wow.
On and on and on. And they teach each one beforehand. But it's like, it's always like the bands are always like these three piece, like mandolin and violin and like keyboard player.
That
and,
sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's really cool. But like, and that's like a good, that for me, that is when I test women whether they're going to really make it in my life or not.
If they can contra dance.
Yeah. And it's not about their skill level, and it's not about whether they even like it that much.
It's just if they're up for it.
If they're up for it. That's all I think we can really ask in a relationship.
Yeah.
At least try
it. Just give it a shot.
Right. And don't think less of me for being into it.
Yeah.
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 We are. So, anyway. All that being said. So you're doing, getting more busy with acting work and stuff.
Yes.
And okay, so you're on Insecure, which is going to be on HBO coming up soon, right?
Yes, it'll drop in October.
That's so cool. And so, did that come from the Awkward Black Girl series directly?
So what happened is, it's a whole different story in a whole different world from Awkward Black Girl.
Mm-hmm.
But I was obviously in Awkward Black Girl. I played the best friend mm-hmm. of Issa. And what I believe happened was HBO got interested in Issa towards the end of season 2 of Awkward Black Girl, and they signed a deal to mm-hmm. write a whole new show for HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 3 years ago. And so she wrote a pilot with Larry Wilmore.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, honestly, it took like 2.5 years to kind of get off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then shot the pilot in September or October of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got picked up like after a week because HBO loved it.
That's awesome.
Of course.
Yeah.
And then they shot the 8-episode series like June and July of mm-hmm. this year. And I was just super grateful to be a part of that show as well.
That's
but
so
I'm playing
cool.
a whole new different character.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so, and you've been, are you a lifer actor in that this is something you've always like dream? And by the way, actor or actress, what do you have a preference on that?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
To me.
Okay.
I actually like to say performer.
Cool. Yeah.
Is that cool?
That's cool with me.
Yeah. I like to say performer because I also sing and I also dance.
Right. Then that's what describes you. It's a better catch-all phrase anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I prefer performer.
And you have been your whole life performing in one thing or another.
I definitely started pretty young. Like I would put on shows. Me and my brother actually would put on shows for my parents and whoever uh-huh. else would want to come see the shows, which our stage was like the bed
uh-huh.
and it was called the Funny Sunny Show. And it was like a talk show.
Oh my God. This is the most fucking adorable thing I've ever heard in my life.
And we would like sing and do rhymes and like just I would do Indian dancing, which is the kind of dancing that I grew up doing.
Uh-huh.
And then just went on in like middle school and high school doing the plays in the musical theater.
Uh-huh.
Went to college, but I got an engineering degree.
Oh, wow.
Because my parents are Indian. Uh-huh. And you're either
I didn't want to say it. I did not want to say it, but yes.
So you're either a doctor or an engineer. And I was right. like, I'm going to do this. But also in college, I continued to do musicals and stuff. And then I moved out here and I was like, I'm going to focus on this.
Yeah. So wait, how did your parents take that?
Not very well in the beginning.
Yeah.
But then
they were like, no, we like the funny sunny hour.
The funny sunny show.
But that was great.
Yeah.
But yeah, they wanted you to be an engineer.
Yeah, they wanted me to be an engineer. And have like a stable life as most parents do.
Sure.
And I think what kind of, you know, obviously now they're very supportive and they have been for a long time now.
Mm.
And I think what started happening was like, oh, okay, I started booking commercials and stuff. And they're like, oh, you can actually like take care of yourself and
right.
make money and you're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see that you're serious about this.
Right.
So, yeah, they're super cool.
And it probably helped. Now I'm making an assumption, but you have an engineering degree. You've probably approached your like the business side, or at least early on, or I don't know, like you probably have an ability to sort of organize your shit, like to stay on top of yourself a little bit, maybe more so than some other people who like people like me who have like a liberal arts degree, you know, like religious studies. Like we don't have the as much of the nuts and bolts type.
I mean, I am really good at the business side of acting.
Uh-huh.
I'm really good at multitasking. I love making lists mm-hmm. and like crossing things off of lists. That's like one of my favorite things to do. Like after this podcast, I'll go home and I'll say Joe Quaint podcast
uh-huh.
and I'm going to cross that off my list.
Done. Yeah.
You know? So
love a good spreadsheet.
Yeah, I actually mm-hmm. do. And I what's interesting is that I put that engineering stuff like into my writing as well. So I feel like my writing always has a very specific structure and I'm really good at following structure.
Yeah.
So I can use the creative side to like put in like, I don't know, the plot and whatever.
Yeah.
But then I'm really good at like figuring out like A, B, and C of a scene.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like you have a given, you know the boxes that you need to operate in, and that's where then within those boxes, then you can improvise and do like whatever.
Exactly.
That's when the life comes out. But you need it's like a nice little hybrid of structure
exactly.
and non-structure.
Exactly. But I also use my engineering background for the stuff I write about. So I write about a lot of female characters who are the leads, and they generally have a scientific job
uh-huh.
Or something like an engineering job or biology or something uh-huh. just to kind of change it up a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. That's so cool. And yeah. So you grew up performing. I'm trying to find a way to pivot this to religion as cleanly as possible.
Right.
Like, so, So let me just segue right into it then. Were your parents religious or anything growing up? Were you raised religious? What was going on?
Yes, yes. I am Hindu.
Right on.
Yay.
Boom. Another thing, I wanted you to say it. I didn't want to say it.
I am Hindu, and I'm pretty proud of it. I like the religion. It's pretty cool. Growing up, I think what I loved about it is that, as I mentioned before, I took Indian dance classes, and they're called Bharatanatyam, and it's classical Indian dancing. So it's like the ballet of India.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I did that for 10 years, and classes were on Sundays at the temple. I grew up in Pittsburgh. There's actually 3 different temples there right now. So there's a huge Indian community that lives in that Western Pennsylvania area.
Gotcha. Yeah. And Carnegie Mellon's right there.
Carnegie Mellon. Oh yeah. Uh-huh. There's lots of college students at the temple events and stuff. So what really opened my eyes to my religion, besides like kind of growing up in like doing like going to the events that my parents like made me go to, I would go to these Bharatanatyam dance classes every week on Sunday at the temple, and my parents were like, that's your way of worshiping. And I was like, what?
Damn,
that is so cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
I was like, all right. So I didn't really have to like, the thing with Hinduism is you don't have to like go to church every week or you know, do certain things. It's just like, pretty much what I learned from my parents is it's about being a good person and worshiping in whatever way is positive for you.
Right. And now, is that tied in? Because I've dabbled a little bit in trying to understand Hinduism. I've read the Bhagavad Gita. Fucking loved it. It was actually kind of like a life-changing book for me.
Right.
The time I wrote it. Or
whoa! White person appropriating brown culture right now. Alert, alert.
You know, it's probably my favorite work I've ever put together. You know, it was a good year. Wow. Me and Arjuna.
Yeah.
But anyway, great book. And my question, though, originally was, does that have to do with the idea of worshiping in your own way? Does that have to do with like the different types of yoga, as they say? Because like, yoga is not just the physical like stretching
and
LA Fitness at 11 a.m. Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's definitely based on the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and what Krishna was saying to Arjuna during the battle or before the battle. And a lot of that stuff is just advice.
Yeah.
It's just life advice, which is like, oh, this like really has nothing to do with like the things that people kind of assume about Hinduism, which is we worship all different gods and we're pagans and, you know, all it's just like kind of common sense advice in terms of living with your fellow human being in this world.
And one of the things that was so radical to me about that book, and I approached it not like as not taking it literally, obviously, but like I think like the idea that, I mean, one of the central messages in that is like the self and the concept of the self being something that you can either be it can be either your enemy or it can be your friend, but you have to sort of master it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I can't remember the names, I'm not even going to try to pronounce them, but the different types of styles of yoga being like, one is about love and devotion, and that's one way you can sort of become more and more selfless, and one is through knowledge, and one is through like meditation and stillness, and one is through service and like and giving back in a very direct like active way. It's not all just about like doing everything for others, but it's about not having your ego
place. It's complete like elimination of ego.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's about what are you doing to make the world a better place?
Mm. Yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah. And so I'm guessing through the practice of dance, I mean, that's, I think when I love dancing, whether it's at a Phish concert or Contra, I'm testing a woman's devotion to me. no, but like, that's when, I don't know, maybe I'm the happiest, whether it's dancing or whatever, is when you lose that sense of self through the dancing. When you master the steps or you master whatever, then you totally can just get engulfed by that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And you felt that too.
Yeah. Completely.
Now, did you ever hate dancing at any point?
Completely. I was, because it's one of those things where like parents make their daughters go to like ballet class or tap class. And it was similar for me. We're like, oh, I don't want to go to dance class this Sunday. I just want to like sit around the house and like watch TV or like read my books. But it was like, I was definitely like forced to go. But it's one of those things where like you look back, like let's say I also took piano lessons.
Me too.
And I'm grateful for those piano lessons, even though at the time I did not want to practice. I did not want to go to piano lessons. And it was the same for me with Parnathyam. So I didn't want to go, but I went every Sunday. And I remember one of the bribes that my dad like offered me to go to dance class is that we would go to Dairy Queen afterwards and I would get my like vanilla cone with sprinkles. And like that's what I would look forward to, you know, more than anything else. But of course, looking back, I'm like so happy. Like I can still do Parnathyam.
Yeah, it's all so, muscle memory.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where like I'm so glad I have that, you know, foundation in dance because now I do all the other kinds of dancing too.
Yeah.
And without that, I don't think I would have been able to pick up like jazz and ballet and hip hop as well as I do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, because when we learn something, it's just easier to learn a new adjacent thing. Like once somebody, I put it once where it's like, if you're describing to aliens what a zebra was, it would be easier if they already knew what a horse was. Because you'd be like, yeah, it's a horse with stripes.
Right.
Versus like, let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
So, did you ever appreciate the dancing? Like, Parnathyam?
Oh, that was great.
Thank you, right?
That was good. But it's like more, it's Bharatanatyam.
Bharatanatyam.
Yeah, that was good.
Tight. Well, I mean, as the author of the Bhagavad Gita, should hope I got these down. But did you, like, in high school, was there a point where you kind of, like, started to become more and more of, like, a master of it or more, like, proficient at it where you're just like, oh, yeah, you know what? I do like this. Like, I know what I'm doing. I'm good. Like, no. The whole time you're like, nah.
Yeah, because I think I was kind of like a punk in high school. And that's when I was just, like, trying to, like, be my own person. And it was one of those things where like I'm 15, I'm 16, and I'm driving a car and I shouldn't have to go to dance class anymore.
My spirit wants to be free.
I just want to be free. I want to do hip-hop instead, mom. So I definitely didn't appreciate it as much as I could have back then, but now I definitely do.
That's so cool. I mean, and I think of like the more it's because I had to do piano when I was a kid for 5 years and then they made me stop when or middle school. They didn't make me stop. They stopped making me. That's the right way to phrase it.
Okay.
And then so I stopped. But then I was looking at like just if I just stuck through it just a couple more years, I could have been seducing so many women with like Ben Folds albums.
Oh my gosh.
And like I could have like learned all that stuff. But it was like I bailed too early. I was like, I just didn't commit. I didn't see the vision all the way through. But it's like sometimes it's so, man, that's such like such an important life lesson. It sucks being, I totally have so much empathy for my parents, for any parents, because it's like, it's so hard to get somebody to like take the delayed reward on stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it turned out well for you.
It did. It did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but with Hinduism in general, did you have like a rebellious attitude towards that, the religion overall, or did you have anything like that?
I don't think I ever did. I do want to tell you about, I went to Hindu camp.
Oh my God. Please tell me about Hindu camp.
This is the best. You know what? I did have a rebellious thing because I remember my parents were like, you're going to Hindu camp. And I was like, no, I don't want to go to Hindu camp. You're killing me. This is the end of my life. And this was like eighth grade, I believe. And then it was a week in the summer and I went for 4 years for four summers. And that first summer, I had the most amazing week of my life.
Oh my God.
And my parents were totally like, we told you so, you know, and it was amazing.
Where was it?
It was around Lake Erie.
Okay, yeah.
So in Pennsylvania, at one of those like campgrounds. And like I said, there's three temples in Western Pennsylvania. And so there's just a whole bunch of Indian kids who like want to make friends with other Indian kids.
Yeah.
And we went to Hindu camp and it was glorious. I mean, it's everything that a white person would think Hindu camp was. So basically, like, we woke up in the morning.
Uh-huh.
We would do yoga, right?
awesome.
We would do yoga. And then we would, all the meals were pretty much vegan.
Okay, yep.
This is almost like any, like, white hippie's dream.
I know, right?
Like,
if I wrote it, it would be offensive.
Right,
like,
right.
You'd be like,
yeah,
fuck
you'd be
you.
Like, oh, all those stereotypes. And then it's like, no, this is actually what it was.
Yeah.
So we had, like, these delicious vegan meals made by, like, a lot of the moms mm-hmm. of the campers. And then we would, you know, play sports, play games all day. We would do... The big thing that we would do every day is that at the end of the week, there was like a show,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can't really do anything Indian without incorporating Bollywood into it.
Oh, yeah.
So each camp counselor was in charge of their group's like group dance.
Uh-huh.
So we would get together every day and practice for like 2 to 3 hours on like a group dance.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And it could be like just the girls, or you could be kind of paired with the guys and do a dance
mm-hmm.
with like the guys of the same age group as
and,
well.
And which were you, did it change each year to
it,
year?
It changed each year. Like yeah. sometimes the counselor would be like, oh, I have this like really great like girls dance that I want to do.
Uh-huh.
And then we would do that. Or like they would like the counselors would get together and be like, oh, we just figured out this like cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So then we would work on that pretty much most of the time. And then we would sing like hymns, I guess you would call it.
Huh.
But they were like really fun. Like the priest that was there would like make up new hymns for us that were like half English, half Hindi.
Okay. And like kind of, are they like contemporary, like acoustic guitar style, or are they?
They would be. Do you know what a harmonium is?
I've heard the
okay,
the
so,
word.
So a harmonium is like a rectangular kind of keyboard.
Okay.
And on the back of it is like a fan type thing.
Okay.
So,
like accordion?
Like an accordion. So
okay.
There's an accordion on the back. And then so you're playing the keys with your right hand and you're moving the accordion thing
okay.
with your left hand.
Okay.
And that's what like the priest or whoever was like accompanying it
uh-huh.
would play.
Well, and they're like, is it like, are the lyrics, or are they... Is it like sort of like mantra like, or what is like chanting? Like, what is it? But it was just like a normal like song, like lyric style.
It would be, I mean, do you want me to do it?
I would love it. Oh my God, I would love it.
Okay. So this is a song that my great uncle who lives in India like loves. He's like obsessed with this uh-huh. song. And every time I talk to him on the phone, he's like, can you sing the song? Okay, so I'll sing it for you right now.
What's it called?
I can't believe, I don't know what it's called. It's just a song that the priest made up.
Okay.
Like, it's okay. not like an official, like Indians all over the world don't know this
okay.
song. Okay, so this is how it goes. Don't touch my gagari muhana rasiya. Don't touch my gagari muhana rasiya. If you touch my gagari, my heart basiya. If you touch my gagari, my heart basiya. Don't touch my gagari, muhana rasiya. Don't touch my gagari, muhana rasiya.
Oh my God, that was amazing. Thank you for doing that. That was so great.
I did not expect to come here and sing that song.
That was like, that was so upbeat.
But my mom will be really happy about that.
Aww,
I'm sure.
Yeah. No, that was great. That was like, it's like whenever I would do you know, Christian summer camp, or like, because I went to some summer camps that we didn't really have, that it was light on the God stuff. Like, it was loosely affiliated with the church, but it was mostly just like your typical white summer camp, like fishing, swimming,
type
of, like playing games, whatever. Definitely never produced any kind of dance or music show. But and then I was like more in some more definitely strictly like Christian like conferences was what they were called. Like, they were like so it would be like I was with a high schooler like leading middle schoolers and like songs and like,
oh cool,
Bible studies and stuff like that. And a similar thing in college too, but like all of our music was just like, it was either hymns, like straight up classical, like yeah, like song, like verse, 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 all in the same melody.
Yeah.
Or it was like the contemporary stuff was always like a guy with an acoustic guitar who made up like a really like Jesus-y type song.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a great, that's so great. I just wish we had the harmonium.
I know. Oh my God. I have a harmonium at home.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And so... So you did that. How old were you when you were in high school when those were happening?
Yeah, this was like late middle school, okay. Early high school.
Now, did you ever become a counselor?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
I did want to say as a camper, I did stage a protest.
What?
With a couple other girl campers.
Oh, my God.
Because
what were you protesting?
So one of the things was there was like the worship session was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And... as it was happening, some girls weren't allowed to participate because they were on their period. And it was considered dirty.
Mm.
And so we were all kind of really mad about that.
Yeah.
Because we were like, what? This isn't dirty. It's like a natural thing that happens to every girl.
Yeah.
So then B and I want to say like six or seven or eight of us like got together and we went to the priest and we were like, we're going to worship even when we're on our periods.
Oh, shit.
So you need to, like, step back. And,
oh, man.
Like, we think this is very misogynistic.
Yeah.
And the priest was like, okay, that's fine. Like, he didn't even put up a fight at all. Like, I think he was just scared of, like, these eight, like, 14-year-olds coming
up
and
yeah.
being like.
Oh, I would have been. I'd been like, hell no. I'm noping out of this. You know, I was probably just enforcing that rule because somebody else thought it was a good idea.
Right,
cool, yeah,
so
whatever.
So I feel really proud of doing that.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Like, actually standing up, it's like, it's rare that we actually, like, go against the status quo enough.
Yeah.
In that strong way.
Yeah, because it made, like, the girls feel, like, weird.
Of course.
When they were just standing in the back, and then, of course, there's a big sign on them that says, oh, hey, I'm, like, on my period right now.
Oh my God, that's so weird.
You know,
like literally off to the side.
Yes, yes, they would be off to the side.
Cordoned off.
Yeah, and we were like, no, this is not happening here in this day and age. So yeah, so we succeeded.
That's wild.
In making a change.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know as much of the history of like misogyny. I know the history of misogyny in the Christian church fairly well, fairly misogynistic historically.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say. Has that been an issue with like the Hindu tradition?
You know what's interesting is I don't think initially Hinduism started as a misogynistic religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like society, like modern society has made it more misogynistic.
Yeah.
More than like what the foundation of it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because to be honest, there's like so many cool goddesses.
Yeah.
You know, like Kali is awesome, and uh-huh. like there's just so many cool goddesses that you're like, wow, it's like pretty much half and half when you think about it. And
like empower, they're goddesses, they're powerful,
they're powerful, like they're killing murderers and they're like, you know, doling out justice and stuff. So I mostly think the misogyny is just from like today's society, as opposed to like even just global cultural misogyny,
right?
Instead of
right.
like something that is specifically Hindu.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are there? I don't even know the positions, like the authority positions within like a Hindu temple. Like, are there priestesses? Are there priests? Or
there aren't, but I know that like they're trying to make that change.
Yeah. Cause
I mean, it all starts with just 14-year-old campers, you know?
I mean, it kind of does, though. It kind of takes some people being like, well, this is pretty objectively fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know, that's a whole, like, man, that's a pet peeve of mine with lots of religion. It's like, we always want to draw a line at what's clean or unclean or things like that. And it always seems so subjective or so like arbitrary to me.
Exactly.
And I don't know, I feel like the idea of whatever kind of I don't know, because now I start getting into my like new agey type stuff, but like anytime, like, and I think of like the universe and like energy, like it's always about love, it's all about like this all-encompassing, all-engulfing love where there is no true separation,
right? Definitely.
And especially not literally separating off a group of teenagers.
Yeah.
Man, that's so wild. So but then you eventually became a counselor.
I did.
So what was that like going from being the camper to the counselor? I was thinking like counselee. I'm like, no, there's a real word for this.
Being the counselor was actually super, super fun.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where I remembered being a camper like the year before, uh-huh. and how much you look up to the counselor.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, oh, like she is the coolest. Like we have the best counselor. And I was always like, I got to be that girl. Like I got to be the one that people are jealous because they want to be in my group and we have the best dance.
Right.
And, you know, yeah. But actually the year that I became counselor was like very, it was a rocky year
uh-huh.
because all of the guy counselors got in trouble.
Uh-oh.
So, because
for what?
Because they were trying to sneak into like the girl counselors. So they had the
classic guy counselors.
They had the like their like we would get trophies or something at the end of our counseling session, and they got their trophies revoked, and it was really like
a scandal.
It was a scandal. That was the year of the scandal.
Wow.
Yeah.
But and because was there like because there's an added element of like you are supposed to be the role model at that point.
Yeah,
you are the person being looked up to.
Yeah,
I mean, do you remember that? Like, man, I haven't thought about that, but have you in a while? I'm thinking my own relationship as like in that counselor role. Like,
right.
Do you remember some of those like those relationships you have with that camper and being like feeling being looked up to?
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember because I had. Since I was, like, a younger counselor, I had the youngest kids.
Mm.
So mine were, like, I want to say, like, 8 or 9
uh-huh.
or
something. Oh, man.
And they were just, oh, I just fell in love with all of them.
Yeah.
And so when you're that age, like, you're like, oh, this is, like, my big sister.
Yeah.
You know? So you really, I just worked really hard to make everything as fun as possible. Because, like, what else can you do with, like, 8 to 9-year-olds?
Because they trust you so completely, too.
Yeah, and then they're like, you remember, I mean, being 8 or 9 and looking up to, like, a teenager.
Oh, my God.
And you're like, oh, whoa, like, what music are they listening to?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, like,
the perfect intersection of responsible and cool.
Yeah.
You know? Like, a teenager was like, it's not, like, lame old mom and dad.
Yeah.
But they know some stuff.
They know some stuff.
They've been with girls.
Yeah.
A couple of times.
A couple.
And then I think, like, when I was 15 or 16, like, nah, still a virgin.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And then did you ever, I mean, I don't know how strictly you, is in Hinduism, is everybody, quote unquote, supposed to be vegan or vegetarian?
No, actually. So that's more of like a, if you live in India,
mm-hmm.
there are definitely, like, there's the north and the south.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, South Indians are vegetarian / vegan just because of the region that they live in.
Uh-huh.
In terms of, like, I can't get goat meat or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so if you're North Indian, which is where my family's from, Calcutta,
mm-hmm.
We're close to the ocean. So lots mm-hmm. of fish.
Gotcha.
Eating
okay.
lots of fish uh-huh. there. My family really loves goat meat and
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm trying like chicken is
okay.
is big, you know. chicken tikka masala, you know.
Right.
So in general, like North Indians do eat meat
mm-hmm.
and South Indians do not.
Gotcha.
So that's not really a religious thing.
Mm, again,
as
it's a cultural thing.
It's like a regional.
Yeah.
Like where can we get like our food?
Yeah. Well, there's so much. I mean, especially in Hinduism, I guess. I mean, but this is really true of all the religions. There's so much intersection of religion and culture that gets mixed over in society
mm-hmm.
and need based on like literally what's around us. And it's so hard sometimes to differentiate between the two, especially to an outsider.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And then there's, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, you don't eat beef, you don't eat cow, you know, but like when my parents came over to Pennsylvania, my dad eats steak. And my mom likes to enjoy a McDonald's hamburger every now and then.
Yeah.
So my brother and I definitely grew up eating just everything.
Just normal.
Yeah.
Normal American garbage food.
Yeah. Oh, God. Super garbage.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's cool. But have you ever, you went through a quasi-rebellious phase in the midst of this, like, besides becoming a counselor eventually.
Right.
In college, were you involved with any kind of like Hindu group or anything?
I just want to take it back a little bit.
Sure, you know, yeah. Please.
Because I did go to Catholic school for 6 years.
Okay, wow.
So so I think that's important to note.
It is,
well.
Yeah.
So that was from like first through sixth grade. Man. I went to Catholic school.
So you have to go to like the mass and stuff.
Oh,
with people?
My God.
Oh, wow.
So
tell me about that.
It was pretty, I will say that in terms of school, so what happened was that my parents were told by like other Indian parents that, oh, like your child should maybe try out the Catholic school because it's like smaller classes and maybe a better curriculum.
Good schools, yeah.
Yeah. So then my brother actually went to a different Catholic school and I went to a different one, which is so weird. Like,
was either one all boys or all girls? Or
no, it was, they were all mixed and I don't know.
Just different strokes.
Yeah. So I went to elementary school called Holy Cross.
Okay.
And there were always like 10 people in my grade. Uh-huh. So that was very interesting. And yes, we had to go to mass. I remember every Friday morning.
Mm.
And I remember being in second grade and being like, why am I not allowed to take communion?
Wow.
And I remember being like, if you come to my temple, you can participate in all of the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like all of the kind of traditional things that happen. You can eat the, like our version of communion, you know? So I was like, why isn't this as inclusive as like Hinduism is, you know? And I remember feeling really left out when my friends were getting confirmed.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, like I want a white dress and I want, Yeah. So that was all very interesting to me and like eye opening.
Yeah.
Because that's when I learned that like, oh, not all religions are as inclusive and like open as Hinduism, because you don't have to be Hindu to like participate in the really fun activities.
Right.
Like you don't have to be Hindu to come to Hindu camp.
Right.
You know, like just come. Who cares? So that really was eye opening for me. And I was like, oh my God, I feel like such an outcast in second grade.
It's like you were permanently on your period.
Yeah. You know? Exactly.
So it's like cordoned off. That's so crazy. But in that you still had to go to mass, like just to show up.
Yeah.
I guess they had nowhere else to put you. Yeah. You can't let you just have free reign.
Right. So, So I definitely had to go to mass and I learned all the songs.
Uh huh.
And I know all the prayers.
Wow.
So Our Father, Hail Mary.
Uh-huh.
Advent was like my favorite season growing up. I would make my parents like buy 4 candles and we would celebrate Advent. And even though they had no idea what I was doing. Like, O Come Emmanuel was my favorite Christmas song.
Mm, that's a good one.
That's So.
And Ransom Capture Israel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know it.
So that was me.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So you were like really kind of, what did you think of like Jesus? What did you think of like, did you believe like in the resurrection or what was your relationship to all that stuff?
So I definitely believe that Jesus existed.
Mm-hmm.
I think because obviously I had religion class every day as well.
Right.
So
right.
I actually didn't do very well in religion class. And my parents were like, oh, don't worry about it. You don't have to get good grades in religion.
Yeah.
Like I would get like, I don't know, like pass in religion and outstanding and everything else.
That's so funny.
So basically oh my gosh, I just lost my train of thought.
Oh, with Jesus.
With Jesus, I was like, these are like cool stories. Like he's a good guy, you know?
Solid dude.
So he's a solid dude. And, I would go home and I'd be like, oh, we like learn about Jesus or whatever. And my parents would say, oh, he's similar to Krishna, like in our religion. So that would kind of like be like, oh, that's cool. All right. You know, so we would kind of, there was this like intersection of like Hinduism and Catholicism that was happening in my brain.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, it's so rare that anybody has like that direct opportunity, and that your parents weren't even like trying to pit them against each other.
Mm-mm.
It was like, nah, they work.
Yeah. No, and my dad was very like on his plane ride to like his first plane ride to America.
Mm-hmm.
When he was coming to like get his master's degree, he was sitting beside a monk, and he made friends with this monk named Father Edward, and they mm-hmm. were lifelong friends.
Wow.
And we would like go to his monastery in Virginia, like at least once a year.
Wow.
And so and Father Edward was super open to mm-hmm. my dad's religion, obviously, and never tried to convert him or anything.
Yeah.
And my dad also respected his like monastic values.
That's so cool. Yeah. I feel like too, that might be something that maybe it is. I don't know whether it's because of the multi-god system that Hindus are sort of more comfortable with. I think that sort of interfaith type stuff. Cause I remember reading about, are you familiar with like Ram Dass, like Be Here Now, that type, that book or anything?
I know Ram Dass, but but I haven't read it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, basically his story was that he was a Harvard professor who then, he did experiment with drugs for a while, but then through that, he then eventually, took some time in India, and he spent a lot of time with this guru called Neem Karoli Baba, who was also referred to as Maharaji. Apparently with this amazing, like the stories you hear about this guy, this guru in India was like this incredible, it wasn't like he was like, reflecting back to you basically whatever you needed. So like sometimes he was like pure love, but that doesn't mean like he was always like happy, like always like joking, but like he was often, but like he was exactly the type, like this pure, like almost like blank but white energy, or like right. like whatever, he could like just tell whatever kind of problem you were having with your ego, he was able to sort it, like his role as the guru would sort of like, I don't know, flip that around or like confuse you or like right. fuck with you.
Yeah.
But he, I mean, a lot of what Ram Dass would talk about with him in the later years upon reflecting, it's like he had that same, and I think the guru himself talked about it, like this, it's like a Christ-like energy, and right. like the Christ is this Christ energy isn't just, I don't know, to me it's not about being just confined to the body of just Jesus. Jesus right. he also had it,
right.
but it wasn't like he only had it. He was like the one guy only ever in history who was able to tap into this thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know. Have you had any kind of, what is your take on gurus, or like have you ever had a guru? Do you know gurus?
I have never had a guru. Oh, wait. I think my parents said that my dance teacher was my guru.
Oh.
So she was my guru.
Cool, yeah.
But like she never, that's so interesting because I feel like I have like a different definition of what a guru is in mm-hmm. my head, and I was like, "Oh yeah, she was like teaching me how to dance."
Yeah.
And teaching me discipline and like, you know, all that cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she was my guru.
Mm-hmm.
But I never felt like I had like a very specific like religious guru who wore like a white, like an orange robe.
Right. And just was saying wise things all the time.
Yeah. So I don't.
Yeah.
I guess that's what my idea of a guru is.
Uh-huh.
So I definitely like didn't think of my dance teacher as one.
Sure. Yeah. Did your parents ever have a guru? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I don't think they did, because usually when you do have a, like when Indian families have gurus, they have like a big picture of
right.
the guru, like in the house.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, with like flowers around it and stuff.
Uh-huh. They're smiling or something.
Yeah. yeah. Smiling. But I do believe like my grandparents and like other like aunts and uncles, like they have gurus
yeah.
and stuff.
I just think it's such an interesting like area that is so foreign to so many Westerners, like this idea of having like a really revering a specific figure other than this like this theoret, like this historical Jesus. I guess that's our version of
right.
our guru. But like it's often, I mean, like with whether it's I mean Buddhism, they don't call it a guru, but like the Dalai Lama, he has like the same right. serves the same role,
it's
the same
like
purpose.
A figurehead.
Yeah, it's like a model of like,
because the Dalai Lama doesn't say, "Oh, I'm God."
Right.
You know, which is great. you know but it
great.
Is like a figurehead to be like, oh, like this is the person,
yeah,
that like the Pope,
yeah,
right, yeah,
sure, yeah. Would you, do you think you would ever like have a guru in your life?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I
mean, I don't think I would necessarily either, but
I'm not really good at like being told what to do.
Sure.
And I feel like that's what gurus do.
Mm.
And I think I grew up learning from my family and my parents that religion is really what you make of it.
Mm.
You know, that I like prefer
yeah
that.
Sure, yeah.
So like anything kind of structured, which I, even with like the going to church every Friday morning when I was at Catholic school, like that was like weird to me.
Yeah.
And the things that they were saying in terms of if you don't go to church, like you're going to go to hell.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know about that. My parents were saying that I'm going to be like reincarnated. So, and then they're like, fail.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're like, well, enjoy your hell.
I know.
I'll be hanging out still here.
Yeah.
Do you belong to any kind of temple here now?
My mom, like whenever something good happens, mm-hmm. you're supposed to go to the temple and like, you know, perform a certain like worship thing.
Uh-huh.
So the temple that I do go to is in Malibu.
Okay.
There's like the Malibu Hindu temple, it's just off of Las Virgenes Road,
mm-hmm.
and you can see it to the left when you're like going to the beach. Mm-hmm. And so when I bought a new car,
uh-huh.
this was like 3 years ago, I bought a new car. And so my parents were like, you got to go bless the car. And then you got to go like buy 4 lemons from like Ralph's and like put them, like go to the temple and like put the lemons under your tires and like drive over the lemons and then give the priest like $20 to like bless your car. And I was like, all right. I mean, that sounds good. Anything to like prevent an accident, you know?
Right. Yeah. Just extra Hindu insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I did that.
Uh-huh.
I did that.
But it's not something like you're regularly going to necessarily.
No, I'm not regularly going.
That's cool. Is this a situation where, in the event that you have kids, what a clinical way to say that, in the event that you have children, do you think you would ever, you would want them to go to a temple? Would you make them also dance for a decade?
I'm not sure. Oh my gosh. I've never even thought about like kids or anything. Mm-hmm. So I would probably, I definitely want to instill my culture.
Mm.
So I don't know if that involves the religious aspects of it. I think the dance was great. Mm-hmm. So I think if I had a girl, I would probably put her in some kind of Indian dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be Bharatanatyam or Odissi, because there's like all different types of classical Indian dancing.
Okay.
Or Bollywood dancing.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is like I feel really close to my culture because I'm fluent in Bengali.
Mm.
So I would hopefully like to have my child be able to speak Bengali as well.
Cool.
You know, so that would be important.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I would be like, let's go to the temple to like worship.
So for you, the temple in itself is not necessarily the important part to you?
No. I think another like cool thing is that like when my parents come visit, they'll be like, oh, let's go to the ocean and like get blessed by the ocean. So like that's like
that's cool.
That's like one of the things. It's like everything out there is kind of, you know, spiritual.
Yeah, you can make the entire world a temple.
Yeah, so that's more of what I got
from
growing up Hindu, as opposed to like going somewhere and doing something specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Cause I you know, that's one of, I think I remember, it's like when I do go to church regularly, and it's been a long time since I've gone regularly, I've stepped foot in a church in the past year, a couple times. But like, I think that's maybe, I'm not saying everybody who does go to church regularly does this. I just think it's a danger that I think I fell into. It's like, if you're going regularly, you're like, okay, I know my holy hour is going to be at this location at this time, Sunday morning at 11. That's the time I'll do the spiritual stuff. And then once I leave there, cool, check that box off, off my list.
Right.
I can go on, finish the rest of my spreadsheets. But like, I don't know. So I think if we can like, I don't know, that taking that attitude of, yeah, I am going to get blessed by the fucking ocean. And no, you know, and it's not dorky. It's like, it's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a really cool, that's really cool.
Yeah, I love it too.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And a lot of it, like, I think you said way back, you said something about like the different aspects of yoga
mm-hmm.
and service
yeah.
is an aspect of yoga. So in terms of Indian parents wanting their children to be engineers and doctors, there's like a point to that. It's not just because, you know, of the money or something. It's more like, as a doctor, my goodness, like the service that you were doing to your fellow human.
Yeah.
So that's like kind of part of it. Like if you're an Indian doctor, you like never have to go to the temple. You know what I'm saying? You know? And as an engineer, it's the same thing. You're like helping your fellow human being in such a way that it is like making the world a better place.
Truly. Yeah.
So that is, that's another cool part about Hinduism is that like, for me, my work as an actor, as a writer, like I am hoping to like make Hollywood more diverse, make, you know, more females in like comedy.
Yeah.
And so like that's part of my service, which is in turn part of me being a Hindu.
Right on. No, that's beautiful.
Right?
I think when I think that my challenge is because I remember when I first got into comedy, I had good intentions. I had similar. I had good intentions, man. And then but you know, I wanted to. I mean, I even wrote out a cheesy ass mission statement. This is how like.
Oh wow! Okay.
I wish I could remember exactly what it says, but like, it was something to the effect of like, I wanted to do comedy, and I still love it when I'm thinking this way. My point is that I'm not always in this mindset, so it's a challenge to constantly revisit and rejuvenate this sort of that this loving this sort of service. Like I'm helping relieve people, that type of service to comedy. But it's like I want to help like people realize the truth about the world and themselves by like tricking them, and that's kind of what a joke does on a small level. It sort of like misdirects you until you get like a little quick fun realization about something. And so that's when it's at its best, and that's when I feel at my best doing it, and that's when it's like it feels the most righteous.
For sure.
And then you can do it that way forever.
Yeah.
My trouble is when I get into like the selfish modes where I'm like, oh no, I need to like get booked on this thing. I need to get whatever. Like, oh, and that's so gross, and it like has the opposite effect on my energy. Because then I'm like, I would rather stay home than do like that type of shit.
Right. Yeah. I think part of it. Part of the service quality of yoga is that as long as you're doing what you really love, like everything else will like fall into place.
Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, success, money, all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So as long as you're on the right path for you
and
you like know what your goals are, you know what your intentions are, and they're all positive, like they're not hurting people along the way, then you will get like whatever comes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're on the right path, Sujata.
Well, thanks, man.
I think we're about out of time. My parting question to people. So if you don't have a religion, we make one up. But since we have one, is there anything that with Hinduism and your own, whether it's with your own personal practice or something about the religion overall that you would like to, I don't know, change or focus on? This something we just talked about or anything like that?
Well, definitely. I think we hit on like the women in Hinduism.
Mm.
So I think like to get back to like making it more inclusive and equal for women in terms of worship and like becoming priestesses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it all starts with like 14-year-old campers, you know, really protesting and succeeding. And I think just culture in general in India kind of needs to, you know, go in that direction for it to be, you know, for them to succeed and for Hinduism to like flourish going forward.
Cool.
For sure.
That's great. Well, thanks you so much for coming on. This was fucking awesome.
Yay. Thanks, Joe. This was awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's the show. Once again, thank you so much to Sujata for coming out, telling of me so much about Hinduism and Hindu summer camp and singing a damn song. Find her on social media. Look out for Insecure coming out to HBO in a couple months, and give yourself a hug from me. Love you. Bye.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?